Welcome back to Canna Week, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we deliver the week's top headlines in cannabis and hear experts weigh in on the impacts these stories are having on the industry. I'm your host, Heather Wickline. Our first guest serves as CEO of Trulieve Cannabis Corporation, a vertically integrated seed-to-sale operation based in Florida. She joined Trulieve at its inception and has been the key driver for the company's success and growth. Please welcome Kim Rivers. Thank you so much for joining us. And our next guest has an impressive track record of leveraging technology to solve complex business problems and has well-versed in working in emerging markets. He currently serves here at New Frontier Data as COO. Please welcome back Gary Allen. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Heather. And again, Kim, pleasure to meet you and thank you for doing this.
Oh, likewise.
Well, before we get started, Kim, would you mind giving our listeners who may not be familiar with your brand just a brief overview of who you are, what you do?
Sure, absolutely. So as you mentioned, Trulieve is headquartered in Florida. We're by far the largest player in Florida. We also have operations in Connecticut and California, and we're under construction to launch in Massachusetts as well. Trulieve has over 3,000 employees, and we just opened our 50th store. And we have about 1.7 million square feet of grow, and we manufacture over 350 different individual SKUs. So we are truly seed to sale. With really, the company was founded on the premise of becoming the number one customer-focused cannabis brand in the U.S.
Awesome. Well, for any listeners out there, please feel free to Google them. It seems like they are making major advances. Well, let's dive right in. We have a lot to cover. Last week, COSU.org reported that locally essential, federally illegal, how cannabis dispensaries are handling the pandemic. The paradox of cannabis being legal on a state level and illegal on federal is nothing new, but this pandemic has really shown a light on the disconnect. We see operators being deemed essential, paying taxes, but not eligible for government loans. During a time where the global economy has taken a hit, it's hard to ignore cannabis as a critical part of the local economy. That being said, many are predicting that this pandemic will be a catalyst for federal legalization. Kim, as CEO of a leading MSO, what are your thoughts on this becoming an actual realistic outcome?
Yeah, you know, I think that absolutely we're starting to see the conversation shifting a bit, right, at the federal level, which makes sense because, as you said, I mean, all politics are local to some extent, right? And so I think that, you know, the states and the governors of those states who really stepped up and deemed cannabis businesses as essential really did kind of take a stand in moving our legitimacy as an industry forward. And I think I agree with you, that's very difficult to ignore. I think coupled with the fact that we've seen it in history play out before, right, with Prohibition and the Great Depression and lifting the ban on alcohol as a much needed source of tax revenue at the federal level. So there's a lot of parallels. We've talked about that a lot in this industry, right? And it's unfortunate, quite frankly, that we find ourselves again potentially on the brink of a recession. Hopefully it's not the Great Depression, right? But, you know, understanding that cannabis is a real business and can be and is in a lot of instances a real legitimate economic driver at the state level now seems to feel as though the federal government and legislators at the federal level from those states are stepping up and saying, you know what, the world hasn't come to an end, right? And these businesses have acted professionally. They've continued to serve customers and patients throughout this time. And we could really benefit from some additional tax revenue. And maybe this is something that we should consider that I think outside of the current environment would not have necessarily been on the table. So I do think that it's a step forward. Do I think that it's going to happen overnight? Unfortunately, no. I think that it's still going to be a stepped process. But, you know, of course, with safe banking on the table and some other measures, we certainly are hopeful that we're moving the conversation in the right direction.
Kim, one of the questions I had for you on this topic, a couple of things, right? As a leader in this market, right? In truly one of the few companies that has a true market cap that is valued properly, are the states, and because you operate in multiple states, are the states or even the government, the federal government, are they tapping you for information, for guidance, for, you know, advice on what they should be doing?
So that's interesting. I think that we have gotten a better, I would say, and a more prominent seat at the table. And again, that has also changed over time as I think the seriousness of the conversation has escalated, right? So I think that, you know, when we started out, we were still very much a marginal business, and there was still a lot of uncertainty around what this was and how it was going to affect. And there was still a lot of NIMBY mentality, not in my backyard, even among lawmakers. So it was like, okay, yeah, we need to do this because this is just what we need to do, but then we're going to put it over here. And that way we can get down to the real business at hand, whatever that may be on their agenda for the year. Whereas now we're finding that we are the business at hand. And so, I say though, that as much as the businesses do have an impact, that it really comes down to, look, we're dealing in politics. And so it's all about the voters and it's all about the will of the people. And so I think that the best thing, or one of the best things that we as leaders can do, is to bring those people and those real stories of how our products are actually being utilized, how we're changing, just from a business perspective. For us, for example, our intentional investment in minority majority communities, as an example, and really bringing those concrete, this is what we're doing. That's why I always talk about our jobs number, because look, we're a large company, right? I mean, that's we have 3,000 employees. And so, and when I say that to a lawmaker, that there's typically a pause. Right. It's, oh, gosh, I didn't realize that that's what we're talking about here. And so I think that the more data you can bring to the conversation, as well as the more real, again, tangible, I'm going to tell you this fact and figure. Right. But I'm also going to introduce you to our patient, you know, who was patient number 2 in the state of Florida, who's, you know, a veteran that was affected by Agent Orange and has severe tremors. And all he wanted to do was to get back into a place where he could literally pass the offering plate as a deacon in his church. Like, let me introduce you to this is a cannabis patient, right? It's not maybe who you have in your head. And I think that that's a continuing effort, because as much as we like to think that the stigma has completely shifted, it hasn't, right? And especially where we sit, right? Headquartered in Florida, when we look at our neighboring states in the South, we're in a little bit of a different, you know, point in time, I guess, along the chain of the development of cannabis normalization than others. So I would just, you know, continue to encourage my fellow CEOs, as well as, you know, all the activists out there, to keep telling the story. And as we mature as an industry, that we can also add those economic figures, we can also add the job creation figures, and bring that validity statistical piece to it as well, which makes it that much more credible.
Perfect.
Thank you for that. Well, just going off of like speaking to other CEOs, what do you think how can operators position themselves to succeed in this, you know, COVID-19 world or post-COVID-19 world? Because as we know, the cannabis industry has already faced a lot of constraints, but this is just one added layer of complexity. What would you say to other operators?
Yeah, you know, my gosh, we always, you know, we fantasize about the day when, can you imagine if we were just taxed like a regular business, and if we could just, you know, go into a bank and get a loan, and oh my gosh, it like sounds like, you know, nirvana, right? So I think that this is, so in a certain respect, I think that cannabis CEOs and cannabis leaders, it's in our DNA, right, to handle crisis and to have high levels of change management skills, because that's the environment in which we live, being highly regulated industries and having our business models literally change sometimes overnight, not because of anything that we've done or even necessarily planned for, but because of regulations changing or laws changing around us. So, you know, I think that it comes back to what we've been hearing as more and more of a theme, I would say, over the last year to 2 years, is that it's just about building a fundamentally sound business, right, in a high growth industry that has all this other stuff on top of it. So it's really, you know, making sure that you're focusing on fundamentals, supply chain management, all the things that aren't super, you know, necessarily exciting to talk about, but that make up, right, really sustainable and, you know, businesses that last. And I think that, you know, that's my message to CEOs. Fortunately or unfortunately, in Florida, we live in a hurricane, you know, state. And so we have to be in a constant, we're in a constant kind of state of emergency preparedness, right? And so for us, we have a cross-functional team that's established to deal with crises. And we were able very early to mobilize that team and to start working on all the different possible scenarios and really drilling down and then going off into separate tiger teams to run what if scenarios. Okay, well, what if the state shuts us off and we have to go delivery only? What if, right, our business is cut in half? What if there's something that happens to manufacturing, we have to close our plant for a certain period of time. And so that's just good business practice, I think. And so I think that maybe what this has done is to make sure that we're all exercising in reality those best practices that we know that we should be doing. And again, just focusing on the fundamentals of running a good business.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, moving on, last week, the Marijuana Moment published an article about 34 bipartisan attorney generals tell Congress to pass marijuana banking as part of coronavirus bill. There's three reasons why they have put in there. Number one, the public safety operating on a largely cash-only basis has been exacerbated during this crisis. Number two, the large cash transactions gives people heightened exposure to the virus of just passing back cash and back and forth. And then the access to financial institutions would make it a lot easier to collect revenue and help kind of give that injection into local economies. I think the California Attorney General said it best. He said it's unwise and untenable to keep a $15 billion industry in the shadows, especially in the midst of an economic downturn. Do you feel that the current circumstances present an opportunity for this type of legislation to finally go through?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we're hopeful, right, that we will finally, you know, and it was great to see it included. And I commend, you know, the House representatives and leadership there in terms of them putting it on the table for consideration and putting it in the bill that's been sent to the Senate. I think that, you know, while there certainly has been some jockeying back and forth, I mean, you know, our hope is that's you know, positioning and a lot of rhetoric, and that really I have not heard yet. I have yet to hear a really great sound argument that would be on the con side, again, particularly because of the, you know, macro environment that we find ourselves in. So, you know, what I would say is all of your points are absolutely true. I've written an op-ed for The Hill that was published earlier this week that basically echoes those points exactly. And we see it on the front lines, right? And, you know, quite frankly, I just find it very, you know, just crazy that here we are, we're so focused on protecting our elderly population, protecting our immune compromised populations. Those are exactly the patient profiles who are in our stores and who are utilizing medical cannabis as a replacement for other, more harmful pharmaceuticals. And yet here we are saying, we want you to have this available. It's essential. It's important. It's critical for your health and well-being. Yet at the same time, you have to use cash that is, you know, I mean, let's just, I mean, it's dirty, right?
It's
it's dirty substances on the planet. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that that isn't lost, right, in the conversation. And I think that to your second point, and really goes back to your first point, when we talk about our businesses and the fact that we are operating and serving this essential function. My God, like, it's not that we're asking for any special treatment. We're just asking for us to be treated in this on the same playing field as other businesses, and for banks to have protection so that they can bank us. It's not that banks don't want to bank us. I mean, my gosh, right? That's you know, also another you know, business stream for them, but it's the fact that, you know, there's not protections for them to bank us. And so I think that all of those are starting to line up. And again, if we can turn down the political rhetoric and posturing and hopefully focus on the core policy behind it, which again, I haven't really heard many objections to, then I do think that it's certainly in a better posture for passage than it has been up to this point.
Gary, what do you think about that?
Well, actually, I have a lot of thoughts about.
I mean, it seems like just common sense and logic, but I guess that can get lost.
Well, I think as Kim said earlier, and I think it's a really important point, Kim, that data and intelligence, right, is going to win out. You know, obviously, on the federal legalization side, I do think that it was very important to say you continue to tell the stories of the lives that you're changing and the lives that you're touching. I think on the banking and on the operations side, sorry, I'm a COO, but on the operations side, the idea that interstate commerce, protections against money laundering, that supply chain secure management and security are going to be the things that keep an employer who has 3,000 employees, right? If you think about the economic impact study we could do, you know, about Trulieve, you know, what's the economic impact of the societies that you are operating within? That type of data and that type of information to the legislators make the banking conversation much less hopefully much less political, right? Much less opinionated, and much more about protecting the constituents of the lawmakers themselves. That's, you know, I think that's kind of a concise way of putting it. There's a million things we could talk about this, but it really securing companies like yours that are employing so many people and that impact their communities economically, socially, medically, in such an easily defined way. Mm-hmm. We can get that, you know, the getting that message to the legislators is going to be important, because once banking opens up, and you can, Kim, you said it, and we are, you know, as New Frontier Data is a technology company, doesn't touch the plan in any way, shape, or form, right? The obvious things that companies like ours, each of ours, need, you just access to credit lines, access to safe deposits, access to, the ability to not only use banking products, but to promote banking products and to utilize a supply chain that is also consuming those banking products, just makes the entire industry much more secure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hopeful that it can tone down the political rhetoric, but being in an election year, you really don't know what's going to happen. So that's a little nerve-wracking.
Well, Kim, I think you actually brought up something earlier that when you talk to legislators and you tell them you employ 3,000 people and their eyebrows go up. You know, this isn't the same business that we all got into a few years ago. This is a completely different business now. It's very professional. It's very well regulated. It's run by people and advocated for by people that are interested in not only bringing, you know, jobs to communities and jobs to and paychecks to families, but truly helping patients, as your company and you have been doing for years. And those are the messages that get passed. The inference and the opinion pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah, and I think that right at some point too, we just hit a critical mass, right? And there's a tipping point, and I think that's coming, because sure. You know, when you look at just the rate of legalization at some level, right, on the state. So whether it's a CBD program, a medical program, or a recreational program, just the velocity at which that activity has picked up over the last several years, right? And so there's going to become a point in time where it just is silly, right? I mean, I think that, you know, and I kind of am waiting for that moment when, you know, in a legislative session when folks start looking at each other going, what are we talking about? We're spending time on what, right? Because it's become such an ingrained, you know, kind of normal industry in their home states. And what we found in Florida, which, I mean, look, Florida is a pretty conservative state outside of Miami and the greater Miami area and a few other pockets. And what we found in the legislature, which leans a lot more conservative than one might think, is that the first year was really tough, right? It was just a really hard conversation to get anyone to pay attention or anyone to want to spend any political capital on it, because that's really what you're talking about, right? Folks have limited amount of political capital to get something done in a session, and they have to pick and choose their battles. And, you know, we want our issue, along with everyone else, to be the issue that they champion. Right. And, you know, it was just really, really difficult. And then it's just amazing with time as more stores came online, right? And as our product offerings changed, and as we got more patients onboarded onto the program, all of a sudden I was getting calls and text messages of, oh my gosh, your products helped my sister so much, you know, and it would be a legislative aide, or, you know, it would be, you know, the father of a legislator. And it's just, it takes that, you know, as people, right, it doesn't become personal until it really is personal. And so again, at some point, right, I think that the tide is going to turn, and hopefully we don't have to wait that long, but, you know, to where it's just, we're all nodding our head that this is just a foregone conclusion. Right. And I think that along with a lot of other things during COVID, on the technology front, you know, that things have sped up and things have accelerated from an onboarding and change. I think this has been a really high, it feels like a even accelerated than normal, right, change environment. I'm hopeful that similarly, right, we're accelerating this conversation and maybe saving several years or shaving several years off of the process.
Shortening that learning curve, curve.
So, but you know, we'll see, but we're going to keep fighting the good fight for sure.
Well, it seems like the next couple of months are going to be critical to see what happens. Well, we are almost out of time, but before we say goodbye, Kim, Gary, any parting words for our listeners?
Kim, please.
Yeah, you know, I would just say thank you guys so much for having me, first of all. And then second, I would just, again, you know, encourage any folks who are watching or who are listening to get involved. If you know, the political and the national landscape is something that you care about, if you're affected by it at all, meaning that you're a cannabis consumer, or certainly if you're a business owner or an employee, that there are ways for you to get involved. And every voice really does matter. And not to be, you know, cliche about that, but, you know, reaching out to your legislator, reaching out to your congressman or woman, and letting them know that it is something that you care about, you would be amazed at how helpful those conversations are. And you know, I would just say that we're all in this together, and it takes every single one of us to be pulling in that same direction.
Yeah, and I think I would obviously echo that sentiment and that message, and just add to it that the supply chain, the operations, the capability of providing jobs and tax revenue to communities, both locally and nationally, is what's going to win out here. And you know, as we go through something like COVID-19, there is absolutely the human side. And part of that human side is to ensure that people continue to feed their families and you know, have gainful employment and aren't subject to onerous limitations to banking, to taxes, to the capability of being honest about what they do.
Awesome. Well, we will leave it there. Thank you for joining us at Canna Week. Please be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. You can find these stories and more on New Frontier Data's Cannabis Insights Daily, and you can subscribe on our website. Thank you again to our guests and our listeners. I'm your host, Heather Wickline, and I will see you next time.
New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.